WBDG-FM, HD1, Indianapolis.
You're listening to Ben Davis Giants Football on WBDG, Indianapolis.
Hey, let's go! It's
going to be fourth down, last play of the game, barring a penalty.
It all comes down to this.
Open your action.
Victory will not be handed to you.
Tom Allen jumping up and down, getting everybody into it. One play.
Number one, Ben Davis Football is physical. Number one, Ben Davis Football is hit.
Who's going to go home?
All you seniors. Will you let
this
be taken away from you?
Don't you
know it? No way.
You must go seize the moment.
It's going to come down to the signal. Touchdown, Ben Davis! Touchdown, Ben Davis! The Giants win!
I am honored every day to put on something that says Ben Davis Football. I am honored.
When you hit the door, you're a Ben Davis Giant.
This is Ben Davis. We're coming.
And welcome to Inside Ben Davis Football. No, you're not having... You know, or you're like, why am I hearing this at 12:30 in the afternoon on a Tuesday? No, you're not. There's no mistake. It is fall break here in the MSD of Wayne Township. And, you know, when you come in during fall break and things are, you know, happening, the construction, you know, custodians are cleaning. Learned today there's, you know, no water in the building today. So, you know, you never know what you're going to get here on a Tuesday. But we're here. Coach Russ Mann is here. Good afternoon. I started to say good evening.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And, of course, Bryson Hill would normally be here, too, but he goes to Danville. So
I don't think they're on fall break.
They are not. He's in school. But you know what?
Could have put in a sick day.
He just sent me, like, looks like about 12 questions.
All right.
So he's been on it. And, of course, you guys were on it on Friday night a couple of weeks ago on October 17th. You guys knocked off the North Central Panthers, and the final score, I had to go back and remember, 69-35. So congratulations on the win, and congratulations on the final two wins of the season. And coach, just general reactions to that night, and record-setting night in some ways as well for the Giants.
Yeah, it was a nice night to cap off the regular season. We now we have a little winning streak going into the playoffs, so now we everybody getting a chip in a chair and being able to be in the playoffs in Indiana football. So now it's the right way to cap off the season, put us in the best situation possible going into the playoffs.
Coach, when you looked at the stats from that Friday night, just really an impressive array of statistics, 680 total yards of offense. You know, that's like half a season for some teams, but you got it all in one night. 387 yards passing, 293 yards on the ground. Gabe Kinnett, who I apologize to, I've been misspelling his name on Twitter all year. So I apologize to the freshman. 21 of 28 for 370 yards and 8 touchdowns. Initially, we thought it was 7, but
we had to go back to this.
We had to get
worked on that Friday night.
Yeah, we had to get some help from our good friend over at New Pal, Andrew Smith, who is like the expert on any esoteric statistical
unique play.
So another touchdown, 8 touchdowns, which of course was the school record for the Giants. Davion Davis, 225 yards receiving on 8 catches, 264 all-purpose yards. Avery Price, 96 yards on 20 carries. Jazz Coleman, 5 carries, 73 yards. So I haven't quite figured out the average there, but that's a lot of yards. Keontae Toomer, when you look at the defense, 13 tackles, 6 tackles, and 2 sacks for Terry Kenton. And, you know, like I said, you gave up 297 yards passing, only 184 yards rushing to a very good North Central offense as well. So just kind of some overall thoughts there of all those performances that we just talked about.
The performances were needed, too, offensively. It wasn't like we were in a 69-7 game or a running clock game at the beginning of the third quarter. We didn't get the running clock until late, mid-fourth quarter. So they were still like offensively needing to perform because it was not a game that was 100% always put away. So it was nice to see the guys cap off every drive. I think we got the ball 10 times, scored 10 times, and then the last one was just as the clock expired, so we didn't get to kick the PAT. But the Davion finished a few yards short against Center Grove of the single game record for receiving yards, and being able to put some space in between it. 225 is quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like, and then having to go back, you and me, just like all the unique different, like the one play that was the 20-yard touchdown, but he gained 19 of the yards of it.
Right.
So like we're just going back and making sure all that was correct because of a record-setting performance. But there's a nice little pullover or something that my wife bought, Abby bought for me, and all the players saw it last week, and Davion has made a promise that no problem giving that thing up if he breaks his own record. So he goes, if I break my own record, will you give me that much? Yeah, absolutely. It's all yours. Any of the games. It doesn't matter. So he's a senior, so he only has 5 more chances to break it. If he breaks his own record, that's good for the Giants. So he can have the wardrobe. I don't care.
So if you look at what happened on Friday night, obviously those record-breaking performances. And the player talking about there, we kind of had to go back and ask. There was a Davis catches the ball. Ball gets knocked out at the 1 yard line. Jahlil Durrett picks it up, scores the touchdown. So
one of his two touchdowns.
One of his two touchdowns.
And there were 4 players that could have, like, he beat out to go get that ball.
So
that was a heck of an effort by Jahlil.
I just asked Andrew Smith, I said, so what's the scoring on that play? How does it work? And he's like, well, Davion gets the yardage to the 1. The ball's fumbled. You get a fumble recovery for Jahlil, and he gets a receiving touchdown.
But he doesn't get the reception.
But he doesn't get the reception.
Correct.
Which that is just wild that so Andrew would know that.
He does have other receptions, so it does match if you look at the box score. But he could have possibly finished the game with no receptions but one touchdown catch.
He did have 2 touchdowns in this game
as
well.
The other record-setting part was Gabe and 8. And then he also had a 9th one with him rushing. So that's that's 9 touchdowns. But now, yesterday was his birthday. Did turn 15.
Happy birthday.
So the teenager, I've joked around, like, man, I can't wait till you become a teenager, man. So he's definitely not 12, but he is 15 years old. Happy birthday to Gabe and his family, yesterday being his birthday. But 9 touchdowns in a high school football game as a freshman. He's in 9th grade and scored 9 touchdowns.
Now, I don't know if we've done any research on this, and this would probably be like Jason Lilly or something from the IHSA that might know this. How does that compare for a freshman time?
Yeah, I have a lot of 6A history in my brain, and I have a lot of Indianapolis football history. You got to go probably to like a Sheridan football and like Brett Law, like back in the day. Maybe something like that has, or Bremen had a kid back in the day, like somebody that had a lot of touchdowns in a smaller class football, but to do it at 6A, that's impressive.
Just thinking, like, even just for freshmen starting.
Mm-hmm.
And
anywhere in Indiana.
In Indiana. I mean, in the MIC, especially. It never happens. But I can think of Ben Davis.
I can think of all the players that I started as freshmen. And Darius Latham at North Central. He went on to play at IU and the Raiders. David Bell at Warren, and he went on to play for Purdue and the Browns. And then Lee Alexander is currently in college. But there are not many freshmen that are physically – you're playing against 17, 18-year-old SEC Big Ten players.
Right.
So it's very difficult to put a freshman out there.
So Bryson asks, and I think this is an excellent question, the multiple records that fell on Friday night, how can you use these record-breaking this game to kind of propel you ahead and an advantage in any way?
Oh, absolutely. It's the best-case scenario. To cap off the regular season and get the momentum and the confidence. It's the best case scenario for us going into this postseason. It's 3-6. Capping off with 2 wins, capping off with a record setting and performance, and that matches with some other offensive outputs that we've had this year. There's been some games where there's multiple touchdown passes. Six of the 9 games, there's 2 or more touchdown passes in those games. So there's we've got some things that we have done those last 2 weeks that are different than the first 7. And it is almost some parts of it goes to 1A, 2A philosophies of, your best players are playing on both sides of the ball. And we have a thing that we call flyboys that where there's a package of 4 guys that might be on both sides of the ball. When I first became a wide receivers coach, that was the name of the wide receivers. We call it the flyboys. So there's a group of perimeter players that are the flyboy package that could, you know, maybe give us a better opportunity to win every game on Friday night.
Sounds like an R&B group from the 90s or something. I don't know.
That's probably how it was as a coach. Yeah. A first start coach gave a unique, cool name, probably making all the 90s coaches like, wow, that's called the wide receiver. So, like, probably, I guess, a lot of what people liked philosophy at that time.
You know, 90s music is coming back.
Oh, absolutely. Right? It's never left.
I mean, yeah, exactly. So when you look at this game, you scored now 100 points last two games. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly an improvement over some of the earlier games this season. Certainly you've seen the improvement from this team, and we'll talk more about that maybe in the second half. But what, how much do you think the confidence, and this is, again, this is Bryson's question, how much do you think that the confidence has improved in the last few weeks, and how can you use that heading forward into the state tournament?
Well, it's similar to last year, where then we got scary, and it doesn't matter records. Like, we were going to that Brownsburg game, and what were we, 5-5 in the sectional championship, and then we had, like, a, you know, the lead on them that anybody that looked up that score of the state, they were not, like, completely baffled. Like, oh, my goodness, I cannot believe that this is a major upset. Like, it was, yeah, we were 5-5, but no one was like, we had just won four games in a row. So, you know, when you start to string wins in a row, it doesn't matter what division you're in right now. Like, Notre Dame started off 0-2, they're strong wins in a row. Like, in the NFL, it doesn't matter to get a team. Like, you know, the New York Giants used to start off terrible underneath Tom Coughlin, and then all of a sudden they're in the Super Bowl winning anything. You know, like, it's a team that's playing the best at the end of the year. This is a little shorter window of just two wins in a row. We had three wins in a row last year going to the playoffs, and then going into that sectional championship before. You gave everybody in Indiana a shot at the playoffs, and so the scariest teams, the most dangerous teams, the ones that make a run at this thing. And so that was something that, you know, early in the year, a lot of these broadcasts, we were saying, like, we could be dangerous, and hopefully we got ourselves in that position right now where we could be dangerous.
Well, you know, when you talk about things like that, getting yourself into this situation right at the right time of the year, playing your best football, heading into the state tournament, when you go back and you look at the regular season overall, obviously, probably in the whole scheme of the last 40 years for Ben Davis football, not going to be maybe one that's put in the scrapbook as far as wins and losses. But when you go back to when you guys got started last December to where you finished in the regular season, just some overall thoughts about how the regular season has gone.
If you go back to December to now, I couldn't be any happier with what our staff has done, with what our players have done, with what we've handled, what we've managed. I couldn't be any happier with our program. Like, you probably, this, of all the questions that have been asked, you probably, if somebody could read the stress level or the attention, like, that would be one that if you'd have to get someone professional, be like, oh, he seems pretty relaxed about that. Like, there were the things handled, the things managed, and our guys did, our staff did a great job. Our program did a great job. Never, there were things that were put on our plate that definitely could take programs and down bad avenues. And I thought our staff and our program did a great job to put us in the situation. Our staff took one of our best freshman athletes and taught him just to see what he could do to throw a ball. And if we didn't have that built in and that skill set worked on during limited contact number two, then Kenneth Dawes doesn't come in during an LC game and put on the performance that he had done. We would have never known he could even throw the forward pass. Like, he'd never played quarterback before. So having things like that, putting it into place, gave us different options during the season. And he stepped in and did a nice job for us against LC and had three touchdown passes. So, like, what we had done to manage, I thought our staff and our program, it's a nice way to cap off this. You know, it took us a while to build it and get it all right. But, like, the momentum is going in the correct direction.
Well, we can close the book on the regular season now. And we'll head to the postseason. Everybody in 6A anyway starts 0-0 on Friday night. So we're
all in the tournament. We have chip in a chair. It's a poker tournament. 32 players left.
We'll be right back to talk about the Halloween night matchup on Friday against the Avon Orioles. Come on back to Inside Ben Davis Football. Now back to Inside Ben Davis Football, presented by Bear Realtor. We're back on Inside Ben Davis Football. Once again, the best parts of this show happen during the breaks. Too bad people can't see or hear what we talk about during breaks. But heading into the second half of the show now, and on Friday night, the Ben Davis Giants get on the bus and head all the way out to Avon. It's not that far. And the Giants will take on the 5-4 Avon Orioles. And Avon's kind of sort of had a season not unlike yours. They started out with the two wins, one of those wins coming over Ben Davis. Then they went, 1-4 in the middle of the season. And then they came back and won their last two. And they obviously do it a little bit differently than Ben Davis does. We talked about that early on. And in that first game, the Giants gave up 268 yards on the ground to the Orioles. And when you look at their football team, what kind of stands out with what they do, Coach?
Well, they have their own little set of flyboys, too. They got some guys that they're playing both ways. And Coach Rob Gibson has done a tremendous job with Avon. And the program was not completely depleted. You know, Coach Mark Bless had done a nice job. And then him moving on from coaching football, he's still in the building. But they've renovated their weight room. They did a nice job of hosting the basketball sectionals last year. You know, you and I were over there quite a bit, and I thought they did a great job with that. And they just got a pretty good vibe as a school over there. And they, you know, Brownsburg and Westfield have been hogging all this spotlight, and then HSC a little bit, and Fishers, like they were kind of like one of the bottom four of the HEC. You know, it was kind of with an equivalent to our conference, the big four being Ben Davis, Warren, Carmel, Center Grove, and then you were the other four. So they've been kind of the other four in that conference. And when we play each other week two, we both almost we play Pike, and then we go into the gauntlet of Center Grove, Warren, Carmel, LN, or LN Carmel, and then they go into their gauntlet of the HSC, Fishers, Westfield, and Brownsburg at one point. So we both had to go through the gauntlet of our conferences, and they've done a nice job of if those scores were not close in the past, they've either got them close or they're knocking off the top dogs, and they've put themselves right in the running of when we played them after week two, we thought they were going to be a 7-2 team, maybe 6-3. So that's how tight that the parity in that conference has gotten. They've had some close games. And we get Zionsville, Noblesville as well. Even the ones that we guaranteed victories were a little bit closer than what maybe we thought on our end as a coaching staff. But Coach Rob Gibson has done a tremendous job over there. He's got a lot of energy, a lot of juice. Even when I went to go watch our Lady Giants playing basketball, he's at that game, you know, like he's part of the school and immersed in his whole self into that school. So you can kind of see the reflection of his leadership on that program and then how they're playing on Friday nights. And they've gone through a lot of, you know, injuries as well, too. You know, like we win that LC game where we were down 11 starters. I think that night they were down like 9 starters and they're finding ways to win, too. So battling some of the same things and he's done a nice job with that progress. So going into if you look at all the 8 sectionals and the draws, they almost were seeded. Almost. Yeah. It's like all 8 of them were not anybody having like the 9-0 team playing the 8-1 team. They almost all came out perfectly. So like this is kind of how the draw should go, except for Brownsburg's at Pike. It should probably be the other way around. But it does give Brownsburg the automatic like hosting at that sectional championship. So it's like almost done perfectly, like just kind of a keep an eye on it. Like maybe we should do it like that every year.
Right. The ping pong balls came out right,
yeah,
this time. But I do think that it does also point out that the teams kind of in the South are scattered around a little bit more than they normally are than you would see maybe 2-1 sectional or things like that.
There's
10
teams in the 16 that can have a legit chance to set, like if they represent, and if they do represent. Now, Carmel or Westfield or Crowport could knock off the South, but usually running through the gauntlet of the South gets you are ready for that state championship. While the South may have had, you know, a bye week or two on the way down there, like no disrespect to the programs that they're playing, but would you have to win a lot of your playoff games by 3, you know, 1 in an overtime or a 7, then when you get that state championship game, it's almost like, whew, you're – but there's some teams in the North that can make a run at it this year, too. So it's not quite the same as it has been in the past.
You know, when we sit here and we tell, you know, the show's at 12:30 today because it is fall break. How much does that change things for you as a head coach? I know we ask this question every year, but maybe somebody has, you know, never heard the show before. So what are some of the you know, different things that happen with fall break?
Well, if you go back to just when I first began coaching 20 years ago, there were no schools that had this week-long fall
break. Yeah, the two-week fall break.
And
yeah.
There's stories all the way back to when I played 40 years ago that, like, just a Thursday, Friday, there are coaching staffs or programs that would be like, well, that was our fall break game. That's why the performance was like
right.
Everything was down a little bit because we, you know, football coaches only had to imagine 2 days off with the program. Now we have, week-long fall breaks everywhere. We have a 2-week-long fall break. And I love the structure of the school. Like, being like that, I think the calendar is better for students and teachers. Like, it's a lot better. But you're sitting here now managing. This is the second week we've been off from school, and we have a playoff game this Friday. So,
right.
Our guys have been we identified that as a program back in January. They've been hearing about it in the weight room that this game is going to be on Halloween. We could be on the road and on fall break, meaning that they and their – all three of our sectional teams are back in school already. This is either their first week back or their second week back. So they're going to be – it's going to be vibing wherever we go. And even if it were home, we don't have all week to, like, rally up our students to get here. They may be on vacation right now. Like, so even if we're home, we knew – like, we had a picture painted, trick-or-treat, Halloween. Like, it's going to be – like. What would be for 40 years ago, worst case scenario for like a football program? If we were 9-0, number one, this is the only way that you could get your toe stubbed. Like, oh my gosh, how do you manage this? So we've put things into place where we feel last week we practiced in the morning, this week we're practicing all in the afternoon, evening, more towards our game time, the availability of the position coaches who are lay coaches, giving us all day to get all the rides arranged. And we have a young team. There's like a right. I think begin the year we had 11 driver's license. Now I think throughout the season we've gotten seven more, seven more. So like we could manage the
it's a little bit easier
the
now.
Uber driving on the way in. So oh man, yeah. But we're ready. There's no excuses. You can't have any excuse why you lose a playoff game on the road, home, snow, rain. It does not matter. Doesn't matter the officiating crew. Doesn't matter if you're on fall break. You have to have everything prepared. If you want to be a champion, then you have everything to prepare for. You have everything prepared.
So this is this is one of Bryson's questions. How much does this give yourself? Did the week off, the bye week in 6A, maybe fall break negated some of this? I don't know. But how much does that give you as far as a time for people to get more healthy?
Oh, that's a great question.
And back into it. And also, I misread his question, but does it help with the energy and everybody getting back ready to go on Friday?
The first week of fall break, we had three almost working ourselves light Avon install just in case we found something else in the lab. We didn't have to rush everything that very first weekend and, you know, put everything in and work on it for 2 weeks. That almost backfires a little bit. You guys are in the routine of 1 week and capping it off. So we had three practices that were varsity, working on skill sets that need to be improved. 90-minute go sessions, we had some lifting in there. But the way that we capped off last week was a great energy boost. Varsity had Thursday off physically, but they were the assistant coaches on staff. So we put our two coordinators at the JV level. There's Team Nelson and Team Smith. JV finished 7-2 this year, finished with a very good vibe. Very, very close to being 9-0. We had a 2-point play against Center Grove. We lost 21-20, and there was probably a 98% chance we were going to win against Warren after this one pick that we had. So we're very like the JV had a great vibe to them all year. So putting the two coordinators against each other, they selected their coaching staffs. Offensive coordinator was Gabe for Coach Smith's team. Offensive coordinator for Coach Nelson's team was Jazz. Against the defense coordinators were Keontae and JV. They hired their old little like coaching staffs. They had practices, installs. We had a draft around midnight on Wednesday night during our lock-in, and it was like NFL style. Every single selection was with the ESPN like little tone. Like I can't do it by like, but if you're watching the draft, well, it's that one's like before the SportsCenter show. But when a new selection is, Mel Kiper's going nuts, and there's a new selection in. That was the tone that was played, and with the fourth selection of the 2025 Legacy Bowl draft, Team Nelson selects, and then the players were in the auditorium, so they were designing their teams like backyard football. They got to have an install meeting that night. We went to bed at the field house, woke up. There was a lift and a quick practice, and the two teams played. Coach Mark Brown, the voice of the Giants, was on the PA. The clock was going. The varsity coaches were the referees. So it was a pretty intense high level. Watching our varsity players be the varsity coaches was a nice way to cap off last week. And the energy, the vibe, the team camaraderie, and then just all the different pieces of like detail that they, if they got frustrated, that it was like that they know how to listen to that specific stuff. Like this week, it was a phenomenal way to cap off last week.
So you really get a chance to kind of do some work, not only getting set and ready for a very good Avon team that you'll see Friday night, but also do some work on team building things.
Correct. Yes. So whatever our teams needed, upon wins in the playoffs, they're ready for a second or third try going at each other. So like beat Avon, and they know Saturday morning they get another go at that. So after film, the varsity players who played in the game running back out and coaching their teams of the freshmen and sophomores that may or may not be a huge role for us on Friday nights.
That's cool. When you look at Avon coming into this game, what should Giants fans be aware of, or maybe what are some of the things that have changed with them since the first time you played them?
Well, the offensively, it's almost like playing Center Grove, where you know you have all the spread stuff, but in a pickle, like if they need to run out the game, they could. Center Grove, everybody has heard the phrase wing T. Well, Avon's got a single wing, and it's not a philosophy thing that like they came from the single wing to the spread. That's kind of how Center Grove came from the wing T to the spread. It is a niche part for a short yardage situation, a goal line situation, but managing their injuries at quarterback. Last year when we played them, Jace got hurt the week after us in the second quarter, so they ended up having to almost rely on their single wing because Jace was their throwing quarterback or knew the offense as well as his dad at quarterback coach or his head coach. He's a direct, like, he's in it. A twin of Coach Rob Gibson, like he's an extension of it. And when you have an extension of the coordinator or head coach on the field, then that guy's getting carry the whole thing going. You know, you have a coach on the field. So losing Jace last year for them, they had to go into some games with just their single wing, and they may have had three or four plays in it when they played us on that Saturday game last year, but they've expanded it. Boy, do they have some eye trickery back there. And our guys, our young guys running it in scouts, are loving it. They're like, this is some wild stuff. But like, it's something that we don't see around here. But they have their spread stuff. They could jump to that for a short yardage, which is a different personnel grouping. They have some identities, and that's they have some juice when they jump to that too. So offensively, they have some multiple things that you have to prepare for. And do you do it with just the same personnel out there? Do you if you stop their spread, then they can jump to that and bleed you to death and slow down the game. So it gives them an extra little weapon to manage games or put games away. So they've got a little different identity there because they've expanded their little single wing, and they got some juice when they jump onto it too.
We're running out of time, unfortunately, Coach.
We did get all 12 questions?
I cut and pasted some of them there. Speaking of cutting and pasting, that's a bad transition.
That's a great segue.
Friday night, the Giants play on Halloween. I've been in here since like 10 this morning, so I had a chance to dig through Jim Pick's research, and we appreciate Jim Pick because he is the man. If you do not know Jim Pick, pretty much anything that we get into that's like very
history
related usually comes from Jim Pick. Not always, but usually comes from Jim. So this is directly from Jim's research.
Now, I know some of this off the air. You've said 11 times the Giants
have played on Halloween. 11 times the Giants have played on Halloween.
What's the record?
Giants are 8-3.
8-3.
But 5-0 in the playoffs.
Oh!
On Halloween. Yeah. So there you go.
Trick or treat, baby.
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, of those 11 games, 9 of them have been home games.
Okay.
So this is just the third road game on Halloween. The last time the Giants played on Halloween was at Avon. We talked about it a couple weeks ago.
2014.
It was the snow game.
Off and on
snow
game.
Oh, gosh. It was so cold that night.
Oh, it was awesome.
Oh, it was so cold. Great football night.
I was in short sleeves. It was great. It was great.
You were on the east side that night. But
We won that game 14. I don't know what your guys' score was.
I posted 34-27.
34-27.
I posted the picture of that game after the draw came out. posted a picture of that game instantly. It was like Facebook engagement. People said, I remember that. I remember that game. I was so cold. That was, it's an amazing night. Coach Kirshner, through his wife's Facebook profile, comes in. Yep, we couldn't kick the extra point that night going the north. You know, it's just, it was like a memorable game. Friday night,
I was
weather.
Playing on the East Westfield. That's right. Yeah.
Friday night, the weather might be in the 40s at game time. So it's going to be no snow. So.
That night was great. That night, I mean, like, for I don't know how the snow happened over here, but literally every time the defense I was coaching at that time was on the field, these were gigantic snowflakes, about as big as this microphone. They're the biggest snowflakes I had ever seen in my life. Like, these things were like fall on your arm, and you're like, oh, that is the biggest snowflake I've ever seen every time that the defense was off the field, which meaning our offense that I was coaching at the time, but I wasn't on the offensive side. It wasn't snowing. I was like, man, is LC getting absolutely hosed with the weather tonight. It was like four or five straight possessions in the second half.
It was definitely a wild night. Hopefully another good wild night for the Giants on Friday night as they will take on the Avon Orioles. Any final thoughts before we go, Coach?
Well, I'm glad it's not snowing, but trick or treat. This is what we've been paying for the whole time. Like a lot of things we've been saying, to, just a little something we've said to each other, trick or treat. It's Halloween now. Like, no excuses. This is what we've been talking about since January. So it's go time. Playoff time, November football. Let's get it.
6A playoffs start Friday night. The Giants at Avon, 7 o'clock p.m. kickoff. Our pregame, as always, at 6 p.m. Bryson Hill and Ashton Oldham on the call from Hendricks Regional Health Field. And as I've said before, my dad was the former first varsity football coach at Avon. So a little Easter Bowl, maybe. So make sure you guys
Easter Bowl
get
Halloween.
The win. Yeah, that's right. Friday night, the Giants and the Avon Orioles. Playoff time, baby. Here we go. Good luck, Coach.
Thank you. Good luck.
And thanks again to Bryson for sending in his questions. And we'll talk to you next week, hopefully, on Inside Ben Davis Football. Not hopefully, right, Coach?
Oh, we're here.
All right.
This has been a presentation of the Ben Davis Sports Radio Network.